And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this finally Friday, October. Boy, how about April 4th? A little bit snowy outside. Thankfully, the snow is really not sticking in the FM area. That hasn't been the case to our friends to the north and west, where they had some slippery travel earlier this morning. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director, Bridget Riedel. And Bridget, how does it look up in your area? I know you guys had a little burst of some more moderate snow earlier. How's it looking out there right now?
No, we've had snow flurries all morning. And it's pretty much they've been melting as fast as they're coming down. So it's not much of an accumulation, but there has been continual precipitation most of the morning at this point.
Yeah, and again, we need the moisture, so we'll take what we can get. But luckily, yeah, temperatures out there right now are in the lower 30s. And even though it's cloudy and lightly snowing, that sun angle this time of the year, even if it's cloudy, if temperatures are above freezing or near freezing, opposed to, let's say, in January, this stuff is not sticking. If this was falling in January, this stuff would be sticking, but not this time of the year. That sun angle, even though it's cloudy, can still have an impact, and it is today. But as we head into later this afternoon, we are looking at the snow starting to wind down as we head towards about 3 o'clock or so. And then we'll actually see skies start to clear as we head towards the early overnight hours, leading to a clear night and lows in the teens. So kind of chilly with northwest winds about 5 to 10. Plenty of sunshine over the weekend, and we will do a good number at melting most of this snow away over the weekend, with highs in the low 40s both Saturday and Sunday. The pick day being Saturday, it's going to be a little breezy on Sunday, it looks like. And then a brief shot of cooler air on Monday. And then it looks like by middle and end of next week, we should see temperatures more spring-like into the 50s for next middle and end of next week. So that's good news there. I've had a lot of people say, is this our last snow of the season? And I wouldn't put any money on it. There's still three storms between mid-month and the end of the month, and the first two have the possibility of giving us some snow. If not here, then it would be out in the western part of the state. So we'll have to wait and see exactly how that pans out. Let's hope we get the moisture, especially for our friends out west, where they are in severe drought conditions, and they need more than just one storm. They need about, quite a few to replenish some of the moisture out west.
Well, we'll take it where we can and when we need it, but certainly timely rain's going to matter. And as we go through this growing season, I look forward to seeing if we get that at the time frame that we want, you know, at that critical stage for whether it's soybeans or even for our corn and our wheat, certainly for sugar beets, et cetera. So we're going to watch what the season does for us, but hopefully all good things as it comes around. So, and remember, if you are curious what the summer is going to be, you easily can go to our website. Dean, I think you have the calendar up for the LRC, so folks can take a look at that over the next couple of months.
Yeah, and we also have the LRC special that we had on yesterday. That is on our website, wdayradionow.com. You can find, if you want to sit through all 3 hours, but we break down exactly what we're looking at each week with each month as we head into the end of August. So you can kind of get an idea of when the wetter periods will be, when the drier periods will be as well. And again, you can find that on our website at wdayradionow.com. And I've gotten a ton of emails, and I promise I'll get back to you. We'll get an answer next week as I dive in deeper to the LRC, and then a lot of questions about outdoor weddings, concerts, fishing trips. We'll get to those next week, and we appreciate everybody tuning in yesterday for our spring and summer outlook. And Bridget, I think it went pretty well, and I want to thank you for joining us as well. And, you know, like you said, hopefully these rains are timely and not excessive at the wrong period of time, if you will. We don't want that, but it looks pretty good. I think it looks pretty good for our ag community this year. I don't think we're having to worry about drought conditions around here or to the east in Lakes Country. That might be a different story out in the western part of the state, unfortunately, but I think we're going to be okay here.
Well, if you're all worried about your concert tickets, just buy them. Just remember, some of the most fun you might have is at that concert in the rain. Don't give up the opportunity. Yeah. Go ahead and buy them.
Right.
Wear your mud Wear your mud boots. I do that all the time at farm shows. Can't be all that hard. So just enjoy. Well, if you're worried about a drought of money as you get ready for college, Purina Animal Nutrition has $20,000 in student scholarships they are offering. If you are a high school student or currently enrolled at a 2 or 4 year degree program, especially with animal nutrition and animal science, et cetera, as part of your program of education, you could be eligible. They want to see kids apply, and you'll have to demonstrate your academic success, your leadership, your community involvement, and then as well as what you have done in large animal agriculture. So whether we're raising chickens all the way through hogs, beef animals, et cetera, and those are scholarships that are currently open right now for the application. They'll be paid out in the fall. And if you are interested in applying for one of the Purina scholarships, you can send me an email, ag@flagfamily.com, and I would happily share that with you. You just want to go look for them. They are at purinamills.com/scholarship. But $5,000 on an annual basis to be paid to you as a student, not a bad thing. I sometimes hear students saying, well, the scholarship's maybe not worth a whole lot of money. Take every little bit that you can, folks. Let's be honest. All those dollars stack up so you can graduate with less debt. So take the opportunity if at all possible. Scholarships are great.
No doubt. No doubt. Especially with the price of college now.
Yeah. Now, let's face it. It's not quite the same as what we were all doing once upon a time.
No.
Okay. Additionally, down in the Rochester, Minnesota area, Southeast Minnesota has something called the Food Rescue Organization, and it's been renamed now as Equity Eats. What they are doing is they are finding food that is not being used. Perhaps it's coming from farms like vegetable farms, CSAs, et cetera, and they're redistributing it at schools who can use more of that food. It just in January, over 5 tons of rescue food was moved into school systems that could be using it more efficiently. There's about 15 farms that are doing it. Started early on last year, and there's over 300 different farms that want to, or 300 different schools that want to participate and are growing. So that's a need that many people have. Again, with so many of the funding cuts that have been happening lately with USDA, the cuts happened with programs like farm to school funding or farm to school foods. And so if there are other ways that you can be doing that to supplement kids' diets at schools, people want to take advantage of it. And it might not just be vegetables and so forth. Maybe there are some milk producers out there that can make a deal with a school to provide milk. There's a real resurgence in bringing whole milk back into our school systems as well. And if people want to get involved, especially if they want to volunteer and be a part of this program down in southern Minnesota, you can let me know, ag@flagfamily.com, and I'll send you the contact information for it. Or maybe you're interested in getting more information so that you can bring a program like that to our area. Anytime that we're visiting today, we're going to make sure that you're aware of our phone line. You can give us a call on the JLA Insurance phone line, 701-293-9000. You can send emails to weather or ag@flagfamily.com. And you can follow us on our live stream. We are currently on Acres TV as well as YouTube and Facebook under WDAY Weather and Ag in Focus. And as Dean mentioned, even the weather special from yesterday is there. You can zip through pieces of it here and there, but you're definitely going to want to pick up some of those major storm opportunities that are going to be happening through the summer, right? We don't know what the precipitation is going to be, but we just know when those disturbances will happen, if that's a fair assessment.
Dean. Right, exactly, exactly. And I think we went over yesterday, total rainfall is going to, in our area, in the valley and east into Lakes Country, right around the 10, maybe 12-inch mark throughout the spring and summer. So that's a little bit below normal, but not by much. And like we were pointing out yesterday, Bridget, out west, we're looking at, 5 to 7 inches of rainfall out to the west. So that's not good news from Bismarck westward towards the far western part of the state, especially up towards the Williston area where, like you said, with severe drought going on there. So I wish we had better news for out west, but unfortunately that just doesn't look to be the case as we head into spring and summer.
Well, we start taking some of our management tools into account at that point. We think about what are the cropping systems that we're going to use in our rotation to make sure that we're conserving moisture and still getting a profitable crop. We're going to watch rotations on pastures as well as what happens with hay ground. And there's always the question of, will we see emergency haying and grazing of CRP? Way too soon to call. We know that that is always a possibility depending on our rainfall situation for the year, but we aren't going to know that here for a little while yet. One of the things we are going to know and be able to talk about, though, has to do with controlling weeds, because whether it's hot and dry or wet and cold, we're going to still have weeds in the field. And someone who can help us discuss that today is our guest, and that is Emily Oglesby. Emily works with Grow. Get rid of weeds. I like that it's so direct and to the point. That just makes the most sense in my world, because I'm all for the various methods that we can do it. And I think Grow is going to be a great discussion for us today with Emily about what are some of the things that are need to highlight for both applicators as well as farmers as they're looking at their fields, their agronomists, and so many more. So we'll visit with Emily when we return. But first, a check of the markets. And those markets are going to be brought to us by Goose River Bank. Remember, new digital banking is available with Goose River Bank that makes it even easier for you to be more of a community bank. They believe in strong banking, build strong communities. That's the Goose River Bank. Thanks for joining us this afternoon here on WDAY. So glad that you are. Never know, maybe you're out there checking calves. Did you have to tag that wild one or the cow that was trying to run you down? It could happen. Maybe you're on a parts run, but whatever your case is, thanks for tuning us in. And as a reminder, if you haven't done it yet, remember that technology is supposed to help your farm or ranch run smoother, not be stressful for you. TechSupportFarm.com is here to help 24/7. They're online at TechSupportFarm.com. Have them come on out, do a little health checkup for you before you get rolling for the spring. Make sure that all things electronic are moving smoothly for you. Our guest today is Emily Oglesby. Emily is with an organization called Grow, and I like how direct this is. Get rid of weeds. Emily, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Bridget. How are you? I think we're
fabulous.
A lot warmer
Thanks.
Than you are.
Well, where are you and what is your temperature today?
Yes, so I don't want to brag, but I'm based in Maryland and we are pushing 70 today.
Oh,
so.
Man. That would
and
feel
we haven't
nice.
Seen snow in a month.
Rub it in.
Well, I mean, don't feel bad about it. I think that's probably a good situation, to be honest.
It is. It is. But so, we're also, like you, hoping for moisture. It's been pretty dry here, and we've gotten some replenishing rainfalls recently. So that's good. But it's also meaning that the weeds are really starting to take off as well. So
wait, before we even dive into weed control, I think it's easy for us to forget that Maryland has agriculture just like anybody else. Are you close to the Delmarva region? Can you talk just a little bit about the background of ag in your state?
Yes. So I am not on the Delmarva Peninsula, but that is where a lot of the agriculture in Maryland is focused. And the Delmarva Peninsula is really interesting. It has three pieces to it, Delaware, Maryland, and Virginia. We always say we feel bad for Delaware because Maryland and Virginia really carved it up. But it's very flat. So it has a lot of row crops. And it has a lot of a long history of poultry farming as well. And the crops you're going to see on the Delmarva Peninsula are mostly going to be corn, soybeans, but also some sorghum, some wheat, the row crops. And then of course, a lot of specialty crops, especially sort of fresh market vegetables. What their real claim to fame is that they, to circle back to weeds, they brought us the first glyphosate-resistant weed in the U.S., I believe came from Delaware, glyphosate-resistant horseweed. So that's our claim to fame here in the Mid-Atlantic.
Oh, God bless you guys. Okay. And for those big into weed control, horseweed would also be known as mare's tail over here, I think is probably the safest way for us to diagnose that for people, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. That's the term I would say farmers use most often.
But that's different than horse tail. So we got to keep that in mind, right? Sometimes names can overlap a little bit. So horse tail, very different, but definitely mare's tail, horse, you know, all of these things We got to remember which one we're dealing with. So for our sake here in North Dakota, when we talk about mare's tail, which has continually been a headache for many of our fields, that's what we're looking at. So thanks, Delaware. Really, we wanted that glyphosate resistance. God bless. So, Emily, tell us about your organization. Tell us about GROW.
Yeah, so GROW is it's really a network of weed scientists across the country. And they came together about 10 years ago wanting to, instead of just do research in their own state on these weed management tactics that we increasingly need to use to fight weeds, they wanted to start doing these multi-state projects so they could have more powerful data sets. And so they started doing multi-state research products on integrated weed management tactics. That means sort of non-chemical weed management tactics that you will layer into your conventional herbicide program so that you're not fighting weeds with chemicals alone, because as we know, herbicide resistance is really become a real problematic epidemic across the country. So it initially started just to do outreach for these research projects on cover crops, harvest weed seed control, precision weed management tactics. But we've really grown to just be this platform for anything happening in integrated weed management. You can find it on our website. It's www.growiwm.org. And we have all kinds of resources on herbicide resistance, integrated weed management, chemical management, cover crops, just really a big range of weed management options for farmers, because we know that they are looking for new ways to manage weeds, and we kind of want to have the information out there in front of them when they start to take those steps.
And it's not just organic farming that thinks about these.
No, not at all.
Integrated management ideas, right? So what's the trend that you're seeing? What are some of the things that folks are really talking about more than we did, say, 5 years ago in weed management?
Yes. Yeah, so I would have to say the biggest one is probably cover crops. Every year we see more and more farmers trying out cover crops. You know, they were initially very popular for their soil health properties, but we've also found that there's several species out there that can be really weed suppressive. You know, they help produce a really thick mat of residue. So as farmers are using cover crops for weed control, they're running into a lot of issues making it work with conventional herbicide management. And so we are doing a lot of research on how do residual herbicides interact with those thick mats of, you know, cereal rye cover crop that when you're trying to put down your pre-emergence residual programs in the spring, how much is getting to the bottom of that mat? You know, how much is getting to the weeds? Does it even matter if you're suppressing enough weeds with the cereal rye? So we're really trying to get to the nitty gritty where the rubber hits the road questions from farmers who are experimenting with new things. Cover crops is a big one. We see a lot of farmers who are starting to think about or play around with target sprayers, which are a really cool new way to manage weeds, and I think are really going to be a good fit with integrated weed management because they're letting you use fewer chemicals more precisely and put less selection pressure on our chemicals every season. So I'd say those are two of the big ones we're seeing coming up.
Oh, I think that's probably true. And I've heard lots of discussions, like you said, about cereal rye in particular. But when it comes to cover crop that might be used for effective weed control, is rye the only part of that conversation, or are there other alternatives that folks could be thinking about too?
So rye does rise to the top of the conversation very frequently because it's hardy, it's fast growing, you know, it does well in a lot of different growing regions, and it can produce these really thick stems, you know, that provide a very thick mat that blocks out sunlight to the weeds. Sort of grassy cover crops like rye do get, you know, brought up every now and then. Wheat, some people are using wheat, as a cover crop, and some of the others like barley. A lot of people will pair cereal rye with a legume. Like you see here, this is red clover being paired with cereal rye. So then you're getting sort of that nitrogen credit and additional biomass, but you're not losing that thick rye, which is really king when it comes to weed suppression.
You know, you said that perfectly about using other things like wheat or barley, because it sparked that memory for me that for many years in the sugar beet industry, we were putting in barley, at least if not in strips, we were at least using it as a bit of a cover crop, because if not, sugar beets, when they're little, their two-leaf stage acts like a helicopter, and in a tough wind, they can literally propel themselves right out of the ground by using those little leaves and spinning them out. So it's a protectionist idea as well as a weed control idea. And we're going to talk more about those things when we return. I saw an article you recently did about using crimpers, and there's really a lot of conversation surrounding target sprayers. So let's bring those things up to bring everyone in the audience up to speed with those things when we return from news. And so don't go anywhere. We'll continue our conversation with Emily Oglesby of Grow. Welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus, where we get to talk about one of my favorite things, killing weeds. I'm all for getting rid of them. I'm not even going to be sugarcoating that. I'm all for killing weeds. So we're joined with our guest today, Emily Oglesby, and we're talking about Grow, the Get Rid of Weeds initiative. And two of the things that come up, like you said, most often when it comes to not just chemistry methods to control weeds, but we can talk about using cover crop, targeted weed sprayers. I saw a story you had written recently, and it had to do with crimpers. And I think that was a lot about the rye cover crop. When's the right time to lay that crop down versus terminating it? Would you like to give a little background on that article that you wrote, Emily?
Yeah, so I think you're referring to a video that one of our outreach specialists, Claudia Rubione, created, the lowdown on roller crimpers. And it's been one of our most popular because this is increasingly a really necessary step for farmers, especially those who are finding themselves with a big cover crop stand in the spring that they need to manage. And what we're seeing is you can kill a cover crop with a roller crimper. These are, of course, these large, extremely heavy metal rolling drums that are often attached to the front or the back of a tractor. They sometimes have sort of chevron shaped ridges on them, and they just literally squash your cover crop down. It can terminate cover crops if it's done in just the right direction at the right time. But what we're really seeing is that it's best used as a residue management tool in coordination with herbicide programs. So you're terminating your cover crop, you know, with a burn down pass of herbicides, and then you're using the roller crimper to just push that residue down, create a good thick mat, and make your life a lot easier when you're running the planter through that field to try to get a good stand of your cash crop. So this video that we have on our website, and you can find this on our news page as well as our YouTube account, is just a run through of the different kinds of roller crimpers and sort of the pros and cons of using them, because it is a big piece of equipment. It's heavy. It needs a lot of horsepower. It adds another step potentially to your spring, your spring efforts in the field. So it's a really great guide to the basics of roller crimping and the pros and cons and if it's the right thing for your operation.
You know, that terminating a cover crop, whether it's with the crimper or whether if we're doing that chemically, matters in the right timing, because if you let it get too far, you're not going to be able to terminate the rye. And if you ever have a question or concern about when should I be doing this, have that discussion sooner, not later, with your agronomist, your extension agents, your extension weed specialist. Or, I mean, Emily, do you have folks that like a recommended list of resources if someone reaches out to you and you can say, here's who you should call to get the best answer?
Yes, definitely. Honestly, increasingly, depending on your state, your extension weed specialist is going to be your best bet, because they're going to be most familiar with your region's, you know, climate and the growth stages you're going to see in your field. But for larger resources, we actually just created, in conjunction with Penn State, a four-part series on cover crop termination. And it's just this four-part fact sheet series. It covers best management practices for herbicides to terminate cover crops, how to select the right herbicide program, how to integrate herbicides with roller crimpers, and then how to control annual ryegrass, which can be a good cover crop, but it can also be one that turns into a weed if you're not careful. So we devoted a whole fact sheet to that. And you can find that on the growiwm.org website. We'll also be promoting it on our social media channels soon, because we know this is the time of year when people do realize, oh my gosh, I need to figure this out. So yes.
Wait, that's a good, we're going to plant a crop? You're kidding. We're planting a crop. Right. Woohoo. Let's get that done. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
I'm going to take us to targeted sprayers. When you say that, my first thought was, do you mean drones? But I bet it's more of the optical sprayers that you mean.
Yes. So drones are certainly, you know, a kind of precision weed management tactic that can do targeted spraying. But we're definitely hearing more about these sort of target sprayers that are coming onto the market. You know, John Deere has a big one with their collaboration with Blue River, with their See & Spray systems, but there's also other types coming on the market. One Smart Spray from BASF, Green Eye has some, Bilberry. There's some old sort of brown on brown spraying, or green on brown from Weed It. But what they're doing is they are the booms are lined with camera sensors. And in real time, these camera sensors are identifying weeds. You usually have a dual tank system. So you can turn on your spray nozzle by nozzle as it sees individual weed species in the field. It can distinguish them from the crop that you're spraying in. So it's pretty amazing technology, and it's really starting to become more mainstream. It's still, the price tag's really high, but we're doing a lot of research at Grow to help create sort of off-the-shelf camera technology that can do similar things, just sort of to speed up this process of farmers getting access to this precision ag technology, because we really think it's probably the future of how we apply herbicides and most chemicals really down the road.
And that was going to...
And I think... Oh, go ahead, Dean. I was going to say, I've got another question too.
Well, when she said this is kind of what we're looking at in the future, and that's what I was going to ask Emily, is like looking back 10 years and where we are now and looking ahead 10 years, what do you foresee being the best way to treat weed management? Is there going to be anything different that you see coming down the line in, let's say, another 10 years?
So that's a good question. I would say in the next 10 years, I hope that a farmer's weed management system looks much more complex. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just think we're going to see a lot of different tactics being layered on top of each other. Like these cover crops, like harvest weed seed control techniques, in addition to their herbicide management, which will be, I think, increasingly done at a precision, site-specific, plant-by-plant level. Stephen Mirsky, who's a USDA scientist who works with Grow and does a lot with precision ag, likes to say, in the future, I think people are going to say, are you a 10-robot farm or a 50-robot farm? I mean, that's really the idea of where we're headed, because the technology is certainly there. It's just getting through these commercialization roadblocks and getting it into farmers' hands.
I saw a farmer on Twitter make mention that they thought, and I think he was in New Zealand, he thought he had only about 80% accuracy with these targeted sprayers. But I think the other side of that is it's going to continue to improve. We really are only in probably our second season up here in North Dakota of using some of them. It's just going to get better. The technology and the software will continue to improve, just like you're saying with the trials that you're doing as well.
Right. And we do want to stress, anytime we talk about this technology, none of this is a cure-all for weeds. Mm-hmm. Even if we are all using these target sprayers or drones to spray our weeds, you're still going to have to steward your herbicides. You're still going to have to rotate your modes of action. You're still going to want tank mixes with robust, multiple effective modes of action. And that's why we're really excited. We're actually adding a new component to the Grow website. This is the Soy Checkoff's longstanding Take Action group. And they have some wonderful resources on how to steward your herbicide use, including the classification chart, which is just amazing. I mean, Bridget, you know, farmers face a like huge alphabet soup of products every year. And every year, Michigan State University updates this chart with every premix on the market broken down by active ingredient and mode of action. So it's just this wonderful reference guide for farmers. It's available free on our website. You know, you can order it, you can hang it in your shed, have it in your pickup truck ready to go. And that is still going to be important, no matter how sophisticated our weed management, you know, tools become.
Oh, I keep one handy. It's a great tool.
Yes.
And as you mentioned, you know, it's not just about chemistry. You know, we've talked about the planting, the spraying, but at harvest, we can even look at mechanical control, and that can be weed seed mills or hammer mills on the back of a combine, seed destroyers. I'm sure that there's recommendations that you guys have for those too, about the size of the combine, more horsepower. I'm hearing within 3 years, you can remove 80% of, say, glyphosate-resistant kochia weeds by using something like that off the back of a combine.
Yes, this is a really interesting technology, and it comes to us from Australia, where they just have really tackled a lot of the herbicide resistance problems about, you know, a decade, 5 to 10 years before us, consistently over the last few decades. So they invented these seed impact mills, which are attached to the back of a combine, and they run the chaff residue, which of course contains a lot of weed seeds. As you're running through a field at harvest, you're harvesting weed seeds as well. And it just pulverizes them. It grinds them up. And they're very successful in Australia, but the U.S. is a very different climate. You know, we have different crops. We have a lot more humidity in a lot of our row crop growing regions. So farmers that grow and other, you know, across the U.S. have been working with these seed impact mills, trying to see how they actually work here. And there is also an easier entrance into, if you don't want to spend, you know, $70,000 on a technology that we're not sure how it works yet. The Australians also have this wonderful technique called chaff lining, where you just make this little kit and you put it on the back of your combine, and it just funnels your chaff into very narrow lines behind the combine. So you're basically concentrating your weed seeds. Instead of being spread out across a field, they're in these narrow chaff lines. We find they don't survive as well there because they're exposed to the elements. They get, you know, predated on by insects. And most importantly, if you combine this with target spray technology, you know, you could really spray a lot less of your field because you could focus on these chaff lines where a lot of weeds are coming up. And over time, you're going to find that you're slowly chipping away at this weed seed bank in your field. Hopefully, that's the goal. But a lot of this is experimental. It's hard for farmers to take on expenses like this, you know, so that's part of what the Grow Network is trying to do, is do the research for you guys. So if you want to try this, we have, you know, recommendations and resources on hand to tackle it.
Well, our sound engineer, Addison, has opened up the file of photos that you've sent us, Emily, and he's showing some of those now. And if you want to
match beautiful?
Up a few of the things you're seeing, yeah. If you want to add comments to any of the things that we're seeing right now, it's a harvest view, a combine going down the field, and I'm going to guess it's got a weed eliminator of some sort on the back of the machine.
Yeah, so this is a combine running through a soybean field in Southern Virginia, I believe, and he just has the little chaff line chute, which I believe they made themselves, this farmer. Yes, they're very DIY friendly, the chaff chutes. And you can see he's leaving just this narrow strip of chaff behind him. And you can see how much of the field there's no chaff, and therefore probably little to no weed seeds left there. So he's going to see what that looks like this spring, I believe. He'll see what the weed pressure looks like when it comes up. And he also does something called controlled traffic farming, where you try to run your machine on the same rows every year in and out. So he will focus on those chaff rows and hopefully hurt weed seeds that way too. This is the integrated Harrington seed destructor, one of the seed impact mill brands out there. And it is on the back of a John Deere combine, it looks like. And we are examining it. With it off, of course, because they are very dangerous when they are on. That's a great picture. This is a grow research project. This is a great one. So in order to know if these seed impact mills are actually killing the weed seeds, we need to know where weed seeds go in a combine. I mean, the inside of a combine is kind of a mystery, right? So they're actually doing the grueling, very dusty work of collecting the chaff coming out of a combine after a harvest and testing it
for
weed seeds that they put into it to see what comes out. Yeah, not fun.
God bless those guys. That is the dirtiest job I could imagine. Wow.
It is. And this is them testing how well a corn head brings in weed seeds and how well, as a result, seed impact mills would work working with a corn head. Because most of the seed impact mill work has been done with crops like soybean and wheat. So the corn heads are a completely different technology. They don't bring in as many weed seeds as easily as those reels do for corn and wheat. So that's what they're trying to figure out here.
Emily, I want to say thank you for helping to jog everyone's mind and memory as we think about the alternatives that we have for weed control. Sometimes I will hear, particularly on social media, farmers saying, I'm running out of options. But what you're showing us is we're not, that there are more available than one might think.
Yes, and we're working so hard to find you solutions, I promise. and yeah, there's a lot of people working to find the next solution, weed control solutions for farmers, especially in the public science realm right now.
So you're hearing grants in USDA. Oh, absolutely. We are very proud to have a good one. But for those who want to follow along with your social media and your website, et cetera, where can folks find you one more time, Emily?
Yes. So our website is www.growiwm.org. And that's also where you're going to find the Take Action program moving forward on the far right of the screen. And we can be found on Twitter or X, Facebook. We have a YouTube channel, Instagram, and a LinkedIn. And if you scroll to the bottom of our website, you can subscribe and also find all of our social media links. So really great resources. We send out a weekly news page letter straight to your inbox just once a week. We try not to spam anybody, just with the latest and greatest news on weed management.
Well, I subscribe and I'm using it as well. So Emily, thank you very kindly for coming in to join us today. Folks, stay where you are. We want to make sure to catch up with a weather check of the weather and a couple of headlines before the end of the hour. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Friday, April 4th. We've got some snow in the area, most of it on the light side, although we're seeing a little uptick in the snowfall here in the Fargo area, stretching down towards Abercrombie and out towards Gwinner. Morton areas as well, approaching Wahpeton. But again, nothing is really sticking, but we're just seeing a little increase in the snow here briefly. But other than that, after we hit 3 o'clock, we'll start to see most of this winding down and diminishing and pushing off into Lakes Country. So all in all, we're not going to see anything stick here in the FM area with temperatures right around 33, 34. Roadways are just wet. So far, we've picked up another tenth of an inch of liquid equivalent, Bridget. So again, every little bit helps when it comes to springtime. And there's more in the forecast for later next week. Not a lot, but a little bit. And finally, some more spring-like weather heading our way by the middle and end of next week.
Well, I spoke with a farmer yesterday afternoon. He said he was hoping to get some wheat in the ground before Easter. So let's see what the weather does for him. There's a real good chance that that could happen. Maybe even some sugar beets will go in before we see Easter in mid part of April.
Yeah.
Let's see what that's like.
And there is going to be, according to the LRC, a pretty big storm system around mid-month. So it looks like that week of Easter, although we'll warm up, it looks like we will have another storm system coming our way during that week. So, yeah, if he could get it in late next week, right before our next storm system comes in, that'd be ideal.
Be perfect. All right. So out in Pennsylvania, there is a Pennsylvania Farm Show, and folks wanted to give the public more of a view of what goes on in animal agriculture. So what they did was about 10 years ago, the dairy leaders in Pennsylvania went ahead and put together funds for a 6,000 square foot calving center. And what they have there are pens, of course, two maternity pens, a calf pen, bleacher seating for 600, two elevated 12 by 8 foot projection screens, cameras, and so much more. What are they doing? Well, during that farm show, dairy farmers bring in some cows and they have them set up shop so that those cows can calve right there, give birth live in front of a crowd. So first of all, you're going to have some fairly docile animals. Second of all, when the birthing is active and the calves are ready to drop, they literally have people giving a play-by-play like it's a sporting event. And when the calf comes out, the crowd cheers. So I'm glad this cow is calm, But that would be a more of a circus in many barns than you might want to think about. But yes, it's a way to teach the whole miracle of birth through the cows, and then also just be able to tell the greater story of what happens with cows and the calves further along in their life cycle. But yes, I just likened it to a maternity ward, thinking if there was someone in there giving a play-by-play, I can't imagine how that would go over.
Yeah, but probably not well.
Yes. Yes. And so they also are using their social media pages to show off what's going on. They're gaining folks following all the time. And so I think this is a great way to connect with the public. So congratulations to those guys out in Pennsylvania. Very cool.
Well, for Bridget, myself, I want to thank everybody for joining us today on Weather and Ag in Focus. Have yourself a great weekend, and we'll see you on Monday. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.